crowd surged forward against the metal rails, keeping them off the 10-foot drop to the stadium's floor. My weight dropped back into my left leg, muscles tensing in preparation.
Thou who hast given me to fight evil, protect me. Keep me from harm.
It was now or never. If I could get my hands on the lance. I exploded into a leap, aiming for the altar. But the gem on my wrist screamed, and Perry grabbed my ankle. He twisted, his fingers sinking into my boot. He hurled me across the field. I fetched up against the goalpost at the north end of the field. The gigantic hollow sound it made would have been funny if the red rage of pain hadn't swallowed me whole. I dropped to the field, but I was on my feet in an instant, tightening my grip on the whip and the knot grass suddenly sticky underfoot, gripping my boot soles like an angry insect-eating carpet. As my ribs popped together, I jagged to the side, heel grinding down and my entire body in agony. The whip struck across Perry's chest, silver biting, flaying his sweater and the white marble-hard shell underneath.
Lovely! Just like old times, kiss! Kiss me again!
Why did the crowd get so quiet? I surveyed the scene. The Breeds were out of their seats, pouring onto the field, forming a circle, pushing the traitors in front of them. Slack-mouthed, their eyes bright with the shine of the dusted, the traitors pressed forward.
That's where he's going to get the initial charge to break open the Hellmouth. Traitors. A whole lot of them. And with that much ritual death, plus a talisman to fuel it, he can keep a gap in the walls of the world open for a while.
It made a mad sort of sense, really. Innocent flesh breaks the walls between here and hell better than anything else. But in a pinch, other death will do. And if it's the death of the damned, it's the next best thing to innocent, because none of the damned ever really thinks they're going to be the one. Death is for other people, like payment and guilt. The damned believe they're special.
I suppose we all believe that, way down deep.
I fired. Two holes blown in Perry's sweater. Black ichor flew, splattering, but not enough of it. Perry grinned, a death's head smile, and stalked towards me. I faded back, still firing, and the fact that I still didn't know nearly enough about exactly what he was rose up to bite me.
He produces hellfire in the blue spectrum, when anything above orange is seriously bad news. He isn't an Arceus or a Talon, because he's always been all too disturbingly physical. And right now, he's acting like bullets are bee stings. A little irritating, yeah, but not putting him down the way a load of silver should.
He flashed through space with the stuttering, eerie speed of Hellbreed, but I was one step ahead of him, leaping up and to the side as muscles pulled against flash-healing bones in my side, and my ankle gave an almost unheeded flare of sick, burning pain.
If I can just get my hands on the lance and a few more seconds lead time, I can disrupt the altar and maybe take down enough of them to...
Perry hit me, propelling me up into the bleachers. Blood burst from my lips.
Red blood. No trace of black corruption.
The gem screamed, pumping etheric force through me on a wave of bright white. At the altar, traitors were being pulled down. Hellbreed hands narrow and hard and clawed and hairy, quelling their struggles as the mood inside the stadium tipped over into glee and terror. The traitors had traded, and now the bill was due. Harry hopped up the bleachers towards me, black wingtips leaving wet black prints.
He's playing with me, cat with mouse.
The knowledge filled me with welcome fury.
Do not get angry. Makes you stupid.
I can't help it.
The traitors were screaming now.
Didn't count on being the sacrifice, did you? Serves you right.
I was up on my feet again. Perry flung out a hand. Blue hellfire slashed up the seats to my right. I was already moving, flinging myself through a wall of superheated air, leather crisping and smoking, landing braced on two seats. I pushed off, twisting in midair, and my feet skidded across the knot grass, throwing up huge chunks of rotting foulness. Traders were dying in droves, and a pale oval of brightness was spinning over the altar now.
Oh, Jesus Christ, it's going too quickly!
The altar was heaped with harvested organs, and the traders were falling at the hands of the hellbreed they'd traded with. Corruption reek filling up the vast bowl space. The bodies fell, twitching, dust eating through them and spiraling up on hot drafts, spinning eddies of it coalescing. Glaring white light stabbed through me as Perry hit me again, driving me down into the knot grass. My abused ribs were howling, and the knife was in my hand, the blade dragging against his shell and biting in. Perry jerked back as if stung, grabbed my wrist and twisted. I punched him hard in the side of the head, fist braced with my whip handle, black ichor flying. He was too heavy, and getting heavier, the physical world rippling around him as etheric force ran through us both and the gem screamed.
Beautiful!
Perry grabbed my wrists, held tight. He was impossibly heavy, as if gravity had decided he was an exception to every rule. Ichor dripped down his face, and he blinked at me. First one mad blue eye, then the other.
Judy! My darling! My flesh!
Don't call me that!
I heaved up under him, breaking my right hand free. The knife flicked, biting his abdomen again.
Hang in there, kidman!
That voice!
I saw in the stands Leon from Ridgefield, his battered tan duster scorched and spotted with blood, while Rosita, his modified rifle, roared. Benny Cross from Louisiana, his ferret face alight as he opened fire with both guns. Sloan from gray, rain-drenched Seattle, the charms in his hair glowing as he swung two silver-plated Eskrima sticks. Terry Parvis from Saskatchewan, dropping out of the sky like gods avenging while the copper charms on his boots' fringes spat sparks. Imoke Collada and Dimitri Roslin, John Blake and John Carver and John Gray and Jack Quint and Jack Hell, Louis D'Armore and Marianne Bright. Too many to list. Some of them I only knew from word of mouth. Others I knew because I'd worked with them. A few had come to Santa Luz to help out once or twice, and I'd returned the favor. Many of them I didn't know at all, but they were all hunters. They waded into the fray, their auras flashing with sea urchin spikes like my own.
Oh, thank fucking God!
I could have wept, because we do something the breed don't ever do. We work together. It means every hunter is worth more than their weight when it comes to holding back Hell's tides. Even when there's a mass of them, every one of Hell's scions only thinks of his own advantage. The hunters moved in tightly disciplined bands, cutting through the crowds. I saw Anya Davie, her beads running with blue light, and Benny Cross at her back, heading straight for the altar.
If even one of us can reach the altar, we can nip Perry's little plan right in the ass.
My fingers were in Perry's hair, and I slammed his skull against the yielding ground. He heaved up, tossing me away. Perry headed for the altar. Anya was bogged down in a knot of struggling breed and traders, her guns literally blazing. Wares began pouring into the stadium through flung wide doors, leaping gracefully and flickering between animal and human form, clustering dazed traders and bringing them down, trying like hell to avoid the breed. Lionesses, tawny-armed and honey-haired, working together to take down their prey. Other catwares simply magnificently fought. The birdwares flickered through their feathered change forms and raked with long talons.
If they can keep the traitors away from the ritual death meted out near the altar, just maybe.
But we were doomed, because Perry was faster than all of us. He cleared a thrashing knot of breed in a single leap and hurled himself at the pale oval, spinning atop the altar's black crouch. The oval became a dome of pitiless white light. Perry couldn't touch a major talisman, but he didn't have to. All he had to do was get it close enough to the hungry orifice. His foot flicked out, and he kicked the lance directly into the incipient hellmouth. I was down as the shockwave passed over me, the fabric of reality bunching and twisting as it was torn rudely open. I could see the shadow of bodies flying, felt ichor splatter over me, and hot fluid trickles slipping down from my ears, kissing my neck. The pain was silver nails driven through my skull, a warm gush of blood loosing itself from my nose, but I was already committed to the leap. I propelled forward, my whip hand flicking, the gun in my other hand now, but it was too late. The door was open. Hell breath streamed free, and a wave of heat so fierce it was cold. I braced myself for the hit as a tide of half-seen shapes burst free of the hole in the world. I hit the ground. This wasn't a regular portal. A hair-thin millisecond gap in the world for something to slip through. This was a full-fledged hellmouth. The dome of white light and obscene abscess swelling, pushing against the altar surface. Hellbreed crawling out of the yawning light as hell shoved them free. I struggled to my feet, strained through air gone thick as lead, moving towards the mouth that was drooling Hellbreed and the shadowy forms of Arceus. Perry lifted his arms, braced against the flood of his kith and kin, and leaned forward. The hole started to clot, seeming like it was closing on its own accord. But no. It was just heaving around something almost too big for it. And I must have known on some level. The thing burst through the hellmouth, its foot crushing against the wooden lance. Ash rose as the lance twisted, bits of it grinding away finer and finer. As the hellmouth chewed at its stored up power, the gem on my wrist gave a hard, painful jerk. The thing that had come through was an amorphous, bipedal shape, silhouetted against the glow. Hellbreed are like elder gods. They don't dress when they're at home, but when they come over into the physical, they need some kind of shape. There's a moment, just as they're coming through, where you can glimpse their alienness. It can drive you howlingly, gratefully insane. But I was already halfway there, fury rising inside me. And we struck, the whip and I, at the same time, with physical and etheric force. And we got his attention. Suddenly, the world went white. I landed hard, throwing up a sheet of juicy foul green, clods of oily black not dirt, knocking over Hellbreed like ninepins, the jolt snapping bones with sweet pain, blood bursting free in scarlet banners. The gem screamed on my wrist, and a shock ran through me from crown to feet as it tried to patch me up and get me fighting again. Everything tilted sideways. Something damp kissed my cheek.
Rain.
It was rain. I looked up. The roof was crumbling. Concrete chunks falling with silent, eerie grace. Smoke thinning as water fell from the sky. And lightning mutely flashed again and again.
They have come. They shone, sliding down through the gaps in the dissolving roof like cosmic firemen, clarity glittering on their armor and their wings. No guns for them. They had swords and slender spears, bows and knives, chains and flails. Hell's Scions, terrified, stood to fight, but only because they had no choice. He landed next to me, his hair a furnace of gold and his blue eyes alight, and leaned down. The gem gave a heatless, massive twinge all the way through my broken bones. His hand closed around me, and he pulled, as if I weighed less than nothing, hauling me to my feet.
This is the help we can give.
Michael the Caretaker. I was so far gone, I didn't even feel a weary satisfaction at seeing the wings behind him. Glorious white, and feathered like a vulture's. Spread wide, glowing like the sun.
Human hands must end this.
Oh, I'll end it. Michael swung aside, his sword coming up, cleaving the cringing air. And then Perry was there, with a sword of his own. Its blade was tarry black, drinking in the light. But I promptly shelved him as a problem, and looked to find the badass who had just stepped through from hell. I'll settle Perry's hash later. Still, if the caretaker wants to save me the trouble, that's fine with me. I have other fish to kill. The hole in the world glowed white hot, and more hellbreed came draining through. The big one, our Goth. Nightmare made flesh now, crouched as he finished settling into form. He tore a sheet of glaucous film away from his body with his claws, leaving himself naked. I took off across the field, jolting agony through me like wine, almost laughing at the idea that I could be stopped by the blood I was losing, or a little thing like the broken bones grating together, desperately trying to heal. I left the ground. The Goth twisted aside, his mad blue eyes wide with delight. And the first shock was that he looked like Perry. Or maybe Perry was just a pale copy of this creature. A marvel of twisted, pale beauty. His mouth a cruelly luscious crimson slash. His ears coming up to high points, poking through the frayed mat of spun platinum hair. He swung his fist forward and it crashed into my torso. I was thrown, the whip handle biting my hands as it was ripped free. I landed again, all the breath and sense knocked out of me. My body decided now was a fine time to just take a little vacation, just lay there and breathe for a second. Except I couldn't get any air in.
Get up!
But nothing would obey me. My hands flaying, and the broken bones healing, but too slowly. Everything inside me straining, and even my will. That trainable, teachable thing that drives the body, that makes it obey, wasn't working. What the mind requires, the body will do. But the body has its limits. Sorceress gem or not, I suspected I'd reached mine. A shadow fell over me. My eyes rolled. It was our Goth, standing with the lance, shaking unhappily in his pale, beautifully shaped hand. It strained to get away, ash rising on a hot updraft. He shouldn't have been able to touch it. But it was probably drained from holding the hellmouth open. Tracers of ash ribboned back as the hungry mouth yawned. Wind screaming as it sucked, shrinking, but not fast enough. It was gorged with incredible power, and it would close itself.
But our Goth is here, so wake up! Move!
It was my own voice. Usually when I'm hurt bad, there was someone else inside my skull, pushing me. But I had nobody left. He lifted the wooden lance, glare of lightning playing along the slick, ash-weeping blade. and a wide, beautiful, ugly, triumphant smile twisted his face. Now, he looked like a hellbreed, the shadow of the thing, freshly released from hell's cold, screaming confinement, rippling under his skin. I braced myself to die again. Then his head jerked back, black ichor spattering. And again, bullet holes had bloomed on his chest, and my head lolled drunkenly enough to see Gilberto, wide-legged, in the shooting stance I'd taught him, making his triangle and aiming nicely. His eyes were bright and lively. He was covered in black, stinking breed rot. The bandage on his arm was torn and flapping, and the eye of Sekhmet glowed on his chest, sending up a curl of smoke that wreathed his sallow, young, old face. Argoth's wail spun the spear, the bullet holes closing over and sealing the hurt away.
Oh, Silver is so not gonna put this bitch down.
When the wall of sound hit Gil, he tumbled over backward, but the dog's body was already in the air, its blonde hide streaked with spatters of smoking black, and it hit the baddest hellbreed I'd ever seen.
Now get up!
Mikhail's voice was back in my head, but I could have sworn... No, I don't need to swear. I saw. One of the winged things was near me, a familiar hitching limp as he eased his sore knee, that clarity blooming over him in a waterfall of light. Not the sterile white nuclear light from the Hellmouth, but the white of a clean sheet of paper, a freshly bleached sheet, sunshine on sugar sand, joy and sunrise. He leaned down, his hair a mop of pure silver, and took my arm. It was the same hand, hard and calloused from daily practice and nightly hunting. The same long nose and narrow mouth. The same pale blue eyes with dark lashes. The same cleft in his chin, and the same vulnerable notch where his collarbones met the breastbone. He didn't look tired, but there was still the faint shadow of knowledge in his eyes. His wings were iron gray, like his hair used to be. And there was the scar along his jawline, now a thread of gold against his skin, and another scar on his throat, a thick, golden torque. His mouth opened, but nothing came out. His lips soundlessly shaped the words, but I heard.
Now, get up, Milaya, and kick Bastard back to hell where he belong.
He gave me a little push, as if we were in the sparring room and I had to do it again, but faster and better this time. I rose, stumbled, glanced down to find my footing, new strength pouring through me, and the gem resonating on my wrist. When I looked up, he was gone. The dog's body landed in a heap next to me. It went limp, twisted on itself. Its eyes fell shut.
Vanner.
Argoth grinned, licking his red, red lips. His tongue was purplish, shocking against the rest of his beauty, flickering between sharp white teeth. The world was tearing itself to pieces around us, but we stared at each other for a few heartbeats. And he lifted the warping, trembling lance slightly. My ribs healed fully. The Hellmouth pulsed behind him, casting knife-sharp, twisting shadows, and the flood of hell's icy heat lifted my blood-soaked hair. I lifted my filthy hands, and the sharp pinpricks of Perry's charms dug into my skull as they moved restlessly. The hornet buzz again filled my head.
That's so strange. Now I remember being dead.
Then he was on me.
The lance moved so fast it blurred, still wicked sharp, even through the shredding of ash rising from every surface. But I threw myself forward, already inside the arc of his attack, and grabbed. My right hand closed on the lance's haft, and its chill jolted up my arms. Argoth had raw power, and a hellbreed's ability to twist things into obeying him. But I am a hunter, and I am human, and I have an edge when it comes to forcing a major talisman to do what I want it to. Because we made the talismans. They're ours. They do not come from hell. My left hand clamped down over his, my fingers biting with preternatural strength, and we were face to face for a long, shattering moment while I drove him back. There was a warm wind behind me, and it smelled of peppery adrenaline and vodka, leather and musk, and the warm smell of Mickey Eel's skin as he lay beside me in our shared bed. I pushed. And the wind behind me wasn't just Mikael. It was my fellow hunters, Anya and Gilberto, and Monty and my cops. It was my city exhaling as dawn rose and shuddering as dusk fell, while I prowled its rooftops and alleys. It was the hornets buzzing, and the spear singing a glassy bloodlust cry, the gem burning on my wrist. And every inch of silver on me suddenly running with the same clarity that folded around the winged things. And finally, it was Saul, his eyes dark with pleasure as he sighed into my hair. Saul cooking pancakes and yawning, his sleepy smile a reward all its own. Saul holding me while I wept, my own arms around his as we both shook, the promise of pain shared and halved in the darkness. Michael had told me that I wouldn't survive, that I would have to sacrifice myself again to destroy Hyperion. But all I felt, finally, was relief that Saul was safe with Galena. I drove forward, legs pumping, and Argoth's face corkscrewed in on itself as he realized what I was about to do. He tried to let go of the spear, but I had his right hand locked too. The gem sang on my wrist, a rising tide of light inside my bones. I pushed against him, close as a lover, his hot, rank breath in my face, his mouth spattering me with yellow foam.
Not so pretty now, are we?
The Hellmouth loomed behind us. The silver I was carrying, and my hunter's aura, would disrupt it. The shock would shred my physical structure, but that was a small price to pay. Threw us both into the Hellmouth.
Hold her head up. Jesus.
Confusion. Stutter flashes of light. I was wet all over and freezing. Every part of me burned with savage pain. Someone's arm under my head. Sharp little charms biting into my skull.
I'll bet there's a lot of wounded. Wait, I'm not dead?
No, not yet.
My eyes flew open. I tried to move, too. My entire body tensing. But Saul's arm tightened under my head. He was haggard and damp with rain, and the blood on his face made every part of me cold with fear.
Relax. So settle down for a second, okay?
Galena.
She's okay. Mad as hell, but okay. We're gonna have to have a talk, Jillian.
I stared at him. There was crusted stuff in my eyes. I blinked. The stadium's roof was a gigantic, gaping hole. The whole place was peppered with huge chunks of concrete, as if the gods of urban architecture had decided to throw up all over everything.
Monty is just gonna have a fit.
You're never doing that to me again. I swear, Jill. If you even try, I'll...
Saul's irises flared with orange as the cougar came close to the surface, then retreated.
Nothing could be worse than losing you.
A flash of pain crossed his face, and it tore at my heart. I never wanted to hurt him, but he simply leaned forward, his other arm slipping around me as well, and he pulled me close. We clung to each other, one bone-thin ware and a very tired hunter. And if there were tears on my cheeks, nobody saw in the rain, and I didn't care. He was alive, so was I. It had to be enough. We didn't get to stay like that, though.
Jill?
Saul's arms loosened. I found I could move.
Davy?
Always did know how to throw a party, darling.
Leon.
Nice friend you got. Where'd you find him?
Oh, shut up. Jill, please.
I got my legs working again. Saul helped. He hauled me up carefully. I still weighed more than I should. Denser muscle, denser bone. The gem sparked on my wrist, humming a low note of satisfaction. My skin crawled. I was covered in guck and goop, and I stank to high heaven. Everything stank. The knot grass was dying, lashed by cold water. The altar was crushed under a huge shipwreck shape of concrete, a charred stick jetting up from its crest. After a second, I realized it was a flagpole, and the char-tattered rags hanging from it were anonymous. The Hellbreed and traitors were either dead or fled, but there were bodies everywhere. Mounds of corpses, and grim-faced wares picking through them, looking for survivors. Or looking for their kin, or for hunters.
Did we lose anyone?
Some. Maybe.
Anya was wet clear through, leaning on Theron. The werepanther looked somber, but Davy just looked tired.
We'll deal with that in a bit. There's something you should see.
Oh, Christ. What now?
I squared myself, wearily, and found I could stand on my own. Not very steadily, but I could at least hold myself upright. I could even fight, if I had to. Except what was left to kill.
I have a sneaking suspicion I'm about to find out.
The lance lay near the altar, twisted, like the flagpole. It was weak, very weak. All the force it had accumulated was now spent, and all it could do was shake like a whipped dog.
Dog? Gilberto? And the dog?
Kills fine. See?
My apprentice was bandaging Benny Cross's leg. Half of Gil's hair was singed off. Benny was covered in all kinds of crap. And the dog's body slumped next to Gilberto, hanging its narrow head. It glanced at me, ears pricking, but it looked as tired as Anya, as tired as I felt.
Good deal.
Okay, what's next? Point me at it. I'll kill it.
Good. Because it's Perry. Sort of. And if you don't ventilate that fucker, I just might. Come on.
At the northern edge of the battlefield, a few of the winged things had gathered. The rain avoided them. They didn't turn as Anya and I approached, Saul and Theron hanging back with perfect wear tact. A few other hunters, Dimitri Roslin, Jack Quint, a short, hard-faced woman I realized was Belle de Soud herself with her long brown fingers flicking uneasily at her whip handle, four or five others, stood in a loose semicircle, watching. Dimitri flicked me a salute, his usual grin absent. I returned it without thinking. I couldn't help it. I stared at the wings. They were all white, some with flecks of brown, and huge. Managing to look perfectly natural instead of a violation of biology. The clarity had faded to a slow gleam around them, no longer hurtfully bright. They faced something chained to the goalpost, glints of gold shifting,
as a blackened, charred thing moved slightly. A ripple of tension went through the winged, as if they expected him to break the thin golden bonds and start making trouble again. Bitterness filled my mouth. The tallest of them half turned. It was Michael the caretaker, and there was no shadow of scarring left on his face. His wings drooped a little, as if he was tired too. His eyes were the same, though. Bright and mild, that shadow of pain sending an answering twinge through me.
You understand?
Yes. Sacrifice.
Yes. You were willing again, even when there was no hope. That creates a new thing, you could say, in the pattern. His father is dead. He is utterly flesh now, as he wished to be. The choice is yours, to spare or to kill.
Where's Mikhail? I saw him. He was here. Where is he?
Only the ones present are here.
Well, no shit.
Sarcasm gave me fresh strength. Etheric force trickled back through me. I needed food and rest, and maybe a couple pints of something eye-wateringly alcoholic before I'd be anything close to my mettle. But right at the moment, I didn't care. I was shaking. But not with the weakness. No. With rage. Michael faced me fully.
Love cannot be forced. Love is only given freely. Love is only proved, though it asks no proof in return. This is important, but it is not our task here. We are to witness your choice.
A wing dipped, indicating the blackened body. And I was forgetting I'd ever seen Michael without the snowy feathered expanses. What were you doing down there in the Hill's boiler room all this time, huh? Just waiting for this?
Witnessing. Serving the pattern.
Well, your pattern fucking blows. It's insane. It hurts good people. It's not fair.
It is all we have.
He made a sudden movement, and another ripple went through the winged things. But he just unlimbered his sword from somewhere. It was a heavy broadsword piece of work, too tall for me, with wicked finials on the guard, and a ruby the size of a fist at the end of the pommel. It looked razor sharp, and its bright blade smoked with dappled light. It looked a little like the sun sword.
Hell, the sun sword's a toothpick compared to this.
But still, you can see an echo. He presented me with the hilt.
It is your choice.
It was hard work to extend my shaking right hand. Even harder to touch the damn thing. Warm strength poured down my arm from the cool metal, and Michael nodded approvingly. I probably looked ridiculous, stepping across the sludge-dying knot grass, gingerly and awkwardly holding a broadsword almost as long as I was tall away from me. The winged stepped back in unison, but the hunters moved forward, almost as if prearranged.
Is this part of his fucking pattern, too?
Perry had been burned. Terribly. Weeping cracks coated his charred flesh. But his eyes were still the same sterile blue. The dome of his skull without any hair to cover it was subtly wrong, and he seemed smaller.
Of course, anyone's going to look small covered in fourth-degree burns and chained to a goalpost, right? Even a hellbreed.
Kiss.
Hyperion. Perry. My palms might have been sweating, or it might have been the rain or the filth making the hilt slippery. The sword hummed, a thunderbolt contained. Perry's own black blade lay in pieces around him, and Perry raised his burned, bared head and stared at me. Or should I say Argoth? A shrug. More blackened skin broke. A brittle sugar glaze. How is he still alive?
Only a part of Argoth. A fragment. Insurance, originally. A doppelganger, meant to be a placeholder here.
in case the masters needed hands in this world.
But you wanted more. Slipped the leash. Made a deal with Jack Karma. And got the original locked away in hell. Then you started planning how to get all of the original's power. All the other pieces of him. But for that, you needed a hunter. Because you didn't just want all of your father. You wanted to be real. Anything above an Arceus isn't usually physical. It can be disrupted, and once it is, goodbye and good night. The bargain with Karma and his line kept you here, and gave you a simulacrum of flesh. And you could afford to settle down and wait for a hunter who could take on your papa and keep you bolted to the physical world at the same time. You followed Mikhail all the way from Europe. That's almost why he drew on you in the Monde the first time I saw you. Did he think he was free of you? Not likely. So what was he thinking?
Would I ever know?
Harry's tongue flickered, startling cherry red. He studied me for a long time, and I let him. The sword quivered heavily, but my arm wasn't tired. It was building in me, the knowledge of what I had to do.
I am flesh now. Flesh, my darling one. You made it possible. You killed the original, as you so quaintly call him. I am his heir, and we are linked. I am your other half. We're the same coin, my love.
Negation rose inside me, but I nodded again, slowly. He was at least partly right. I'd been mortgaging bits of myself to Perry for years, telling myself it didn't make me a traitor. It gave me the strength to police the Nightside more effectively, and his mark on me had been the punishment I deserved for everything.
No, I can't afford to lie here. He's right. There's only a thread-thin edge between Perry and me. A coin's edge. He's waited for me for a very long time. Waited for the hunter who is at the bottom, like him.
We are the ones crying outside their circle of light. We are the ones they cast away. We are the sufferers, and on our backs they build golden cities.
God help me, I understand.
So what is it to be? Cut me loose and take your place as my keeper. Think of what you can do with me, your willing slave. Think of the battles you can win. Or strike me down with that avenging sword. Overcompensating a bit, aren't we? And damn yourself with murdering the helpless, whose only crime was to wait for you and love you.
Those white teeth were now grimed with thin, pinkish fluid, darker lines accumulating between them. He writhed.
I waited so long for you, my dove. Theirs is not the only pattern.
There. That's what he's after. No, I suppose it isn't.
We can make a new one. Just you and me. A fair one. You can mete out justice, and I will make it total. Just let me loose.
I stepped closer. I suppose it isn't the only pattern. It's not even the one that matters.
Let me free. You will never be lonely, Kiss. Not so long as I am able to comfort you.
Oh, God. The problem wasn't that he said it. The problem is that it's true. There was only a hair's breadth of difference between Perry and me. Or at least the part of me that made sure I survived. The stranger who lived inside me, strong and ruthless where I was weak. And with him dead, down in the secret place where the animal of survival crouches, the part of me that was coldly determined to do what had to be done, I would be alone. Utterly alone. The sword rose, its blade suddenly pouring with white radiance. Perry bared his teeth. The golden chain burst. My right wrist flamed with cramping pain. But I brought the blade down. The cut passed through Perry and the goalpost. It smashed into the wet ground. My right arm caught fire, torn out by the roots, every nerve screaming. I was flung and landed hard. I forced my fingers open, and the sword fell away. They took wing, spiraling up with a grace and authority. The last one bent over me, blue eyes dark with sorrow, but he was smiling, and he laid one warm finger to my lips. Warmth broke over me in a wave, white light filling my head for one long, glorious moment.
Well done.
Maybe it wasn't him. Maybe I just thought he said it. Maybe I needed someone to say it. In any case, he vanished. I lay there in the rain, fresh cold sludge working up through my hair and the tatters of my coat, with my right arm flung up as if to protect me, my whole, naked, unmarked right arm.
We had Galena to thank. Pissing off a sanctuary by attempting to burn down her house from the outside is not a good idea. And she'd done something Sanks only keep for emergencies. Somehow opening a space down in her vaults for hunters to step through from other sanctuaries. They'd been flooding into Santa Luz ever since I'd made that frantic phone call to Anya Davie. And with them working from the top and other hunters working from the bottom, as well as Galena's control over the wrecked physical structure of her house, they'd broken through before dusk. It didn't take a genius to figure out something big was going down either. With the sky going dark and the Hellbreed traders popping up everywhere and making for the stadium, you only had to have half a brain in your head to figure out where the big event was going down. Montaigne was moaning about property damage. Anya filled out the reams of paperwork for a major paranormal incident so we could get government funding. Flash floods had claimed a couple of lives. Whole sections of the barrio were burned down. The morgue was groaning at the seams from the citywide spree of murder, arson, and other hellbreed fun. Most of the other hunters had only stayed to help deal with the cleanup in the stadium. Banefire and yellow tape, just to be sure. And the lance reduced to cold metallic ash scraped into an alabaster jar. Then they headed back to their cities. We're not much on goodbyes. So mostly, they just slid out of town after exchanging a few words with me or Davie. A few stayed. We'd lost 4 hunters and 6 wares. One of the wares was Rahel, and oddly enough, that was the thing I cried over, hunched next to Saul's bed with my face in my knees, snot slicking my upper lip as I shook and sobbed as quietly as possible. I bit the smooth, unmarked skin on my right wrist, where a scar in the shape of a pair of lips had been pressed, where the gem had shivered free of my flesh. I was still stronger and faster than the average hunter, but there was no mark on me.
It's not even the only pattern that matters.
A bunch of breed had escaped through the Hellmouth. Things were going to be hopping all over. but at least we'd staved off the big catastrophe. Our Goth was no more, and there hadn't been any other prepared Hellmouths. Just the one. Just Perry's lunge toward fleshly incarnation. With me as his linchpin and our Goth's power behind him, what would he have been able to do? What wouldn't he have done? Galena's house and shop were fully rebuilt in a matter of 18 hours, growing up from the ground like a mushroom. You can't keep a Sank down for long. Even if Perry had succeeded in locking her temporarily inside her vault and making her mad, she stalked around for a while, checking every inch of her house and making tiny adjustments, while the walls shivered with red gold sheets of cascading energy. We all stayed out of her way, except for Theron. The dog's body had vanished. One moment it was there at the stadium, the next, gone. I didn't mention it to Davey. Gilberto was in the barrio with some other hunter apprentices and Leon Budge, helping the wares rebuild. Mickey's on Mayfair had gone down in a 3-alarm fire. More Hellbreed work, but they would rebuild. Saul slept through most of it, but every time he woke up, I was at his bedside. Davey handled the rest. It was one more thing to thank her for. Every time I tried, though, she just rolled her eyes and waved an absinthe bottle at me, threatening to make me drink until I shut up. I shut up. When Saul woke, he ate. I watched him fill out bit by bit, thanking God I had him. I did not think about Perry, or about wings. I didn't sleep much either. Maybe I was afraid of dreaming. I asked the silence in my chest, "Who am I? Tell me who I am now." There was no answer. Anya came by one long, drowsy, sunny afternoon. Saul was sleeping deeply on his side, his hair streaked with tawny lights. I tiptoed to the door, careful not to wake him. "Shh." As I slipped into the hallway, Davey pushed a bead-weighted strand of hair behind her ear, and her bindi glimmered. I left the door open a crack so I could hear him.
"You can take the truck. Get out. Get away. Get your head cleared out. There's nothing you can do here."
I slumped against the wall, one hand on a knife hilt. She was tense, I realized, and I let my fingers fall away.
"I'm a liability."
"You need a vacation. You've done enough for a while, and if you keep pushing, you're going to kill yourself. Or Saul. Or both. And I don't want to deal with that."
I moved, restless, looked at the floor. Our boots were placed just so, both of us braced and ready for action.
"Mikhail, he was there."
"Maybe he was. I'm not going to fucking disagree. I'm not even going to speculate who or what those bird things were. Nobody is."
"At least not out loud."
"One thing."
"Okay."
"The Monde. Burn it. Banefire. Please."
"Of course, Jill."
Her hand on my arm, brutally short fingernails digging in.
"Perry's dead. Absolutely dead. He's not coming back."
"You promise? Because I wouldn't put it past him."
But she was a hunter. I looked up. We held each other's gaze for a long time, possibly an eternity. And I found out, gratefully, that I couldn't lie to a fellow hunter.
"I'm afraid either way, Davey."
She nodded. There was nothing else to say, so she didn't bother. She just let me fold forward until my head was on her shoulder. She stroked my hair, touching the sharp-spined charms he'd given me, and they didn't bite either of us.
Misericordia.
We left near dusk, stealing out like a pair of thieves. At least, we would have sneaked out if Galena hadn't packed everything for us, and Theron hadn't cooked a gluttonous farewell meal, during which Anya stalked in, reeking of smoke, and nodded at me. The Monday was gutted. I didn't even have to go check. She stayed only long enough for a silent beer before vanishing again. Gilberto sucked down a couple of beers too, ate a whole pan of tamales, and informed me he was going to be working in the barrio with the wares, not to mention training with Davey until I came back. I told him we still needed to discuss his following orders. He actually winked at me and left with a couple of bird wares who didn't look at me. They were probably kin of the deceased, but they said nothing. Wares don't talk about their dead. The shop door opened. Theron waved, then ducked back inside Galena's store. I pulled out slowly, even though the street was deserted. Turned left at the bottom of the slight hill and began threading our way toward the freeway. We'll stop over the state line for a snack. And you know, if you get tired...
I'm fine, kitten.
Here. I dug in my pocket. The new coat was stiff, and I was hoping I could go for at least a week without getting it ripped or blown off me. We were supposed to be embarking on a vacation, but there were a lot of new Hellbreed around. Trouble might find us. I fished out an unopened pack of Charvels. Congrats. Galena says you can smoke again.
Thank God.
He grabbed for it. The rearview mirror was alive with reflected sunset, but a shadow flickered in its depths. I stood on the brake. Saul's right hand slapped down on the dash.
Jill.
I kept my gun low and ready, scanned the rooftops, every hair quivering, my nape crawling with goose flesh. Readiness settled over me, and it felt so good I could have cried. A long, lean shape flickered out of the alley to my right. I eased my finger off the trigger. Christ.
Is that what I think it is?
The dog's body's fur gleamed golden. It was rail thin, and it cringed as it trot walked up to me, ears back and flat, stubby tail tucked as far as it could go. When it got within 10 feet, its front end came down. And it finished by literally crawling on its belly. The ugly thing heaved to a stop right in front of my boots, and I shut my eyes. Sweat stood out all over me. I lifted the gun, just a little. Saul was still and quiet, watching.
I can just bend down, put the barrel against the thing's domed head, and pull the trigger. Easy, so very easy.
Its head was on my boots.
No, Jill. You don't get a chance to practice mercy every day.
My cheeks were wet. I forced my eyes open.
Put the gate down. Will you, Saul?
Sure, kitten.
I moved my toes, and the dog looked up, its eyes wide and dark now. Not blue, and not pale, colorless crystalline. Relief tasted like thin copper. My mouth was full of it. I swiped at my nose with the back of my hand.
Get in!
The dog hauled itself up. It shambled to the end of the truck and made a graceless, clumsy scrabble. It settled down right next to the spare tire and closed its weary eyes. Saul lit a Charvel. He blew out a cloud of cherry-scented smoke.
Saul, I'm sorry. I can't...
I always wanted a hound.
Everything I wanted to say balled up inside me, and he glanced over. A half-smile curled up one corner of his mouth, and the pressure inside my chest eased.
How the hell does he do that?
I thought cats don't like dogs.
That's not a dog, that's a hound. Completely different. Hope it eats Purina.
Yeah.
Traffic was light here, for once. And if we were lucky, we'd be out of town in 20 minutes.
Saul?
He settled further, stretching his legs out.
I love you.
I'm surprised he heard me.
because I couldn't say it very loud.
I love you too, kitten.
By the time we crossed the state line, he'd scooted over to the middle of the seat. I had my arm around him, and we drove on into the desert night.
Jill Kismet, Book 6, Angel Town, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, Lilith St. Crow. Published by arrangement with Hachette Book Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Julianne Elliott, Stephen Carpenter, Ren Casey, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, Johan Detweiler, Alyssa Wilmoth, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Gregory Gorton, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, and Nathaniel Perry. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Allison Thomas and Rose Supan. Graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. Special thanks to Lilith St. Crow for invaluable assistance in the production of the Jill Kismet series. If you enjoy Jill Kismet, Angel Town, be sure to listen to Lilith St. Crow's Dante Valentine series, available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Graphic Audio presents Cotton Pickens.
You calling me a cheat?
Well, friend, the way you're dealing off the bottom with them pasteboards, it sure looks like it to me.
Why, you horse's ass!
You there, man who called himself Cotton. We know you're down there in that holler. Ain't nobody gonna hurt you. We got a proposition for you. That's all. That there was Jack Dolan you killed back yonder in the saloon. The other one was his partner, the fat one named Larson. Both of them was gunslingers. You plenty fast, Mr. Cotton. Might be the man we want. You want a job?
I was still sort of not believing it when they handed me the badge. Sheriff of Puma County, Wyoming Territory. Notice, these rules go into effect right now. No shooting off guns in the town of Doubtful. No galloping horses in town. No horse racing in town. Now, I wouldn't hold it again none of you if you's all to quit, boys. You ain't getting paid enough to put your butts on the line. Way I see it, we're soon gonna have more than 50 gunfighters in this valley. I aim to either stop this building up war in the valley or stand right in the middle of it shooting. You boys planning on starting a war all by yourselves?
Law won't do nothing. So I guess that leaves it up to us, right, Sheriff?
What you all have to do is get organized, get together. Little ranchers, farmers, sheepmen, you all gotta start pulling in double harness. You gotta start being real careful not to let none of these high-paid gun slicks pull you into trying to match them on the draw. I done all that a man could do, Preacher. But I'll add this. You're fixing to get a lot of good men killed in this valley if you don't back off this stupid plan of yours and break up this so-called army.
Nonsense! I shall lead my Christian army into the Valley of Death, and we shall emerge victorious, waving the banner of Christ!
Cotton!
Jack? What's on your mind?
Killing you!
You're crazy, Jack! Plum loco! We're brothers!
Don't make no difference.
You're lying, Jack. Who hired you to gun me?
Nobody, Cotton. And I'm telling you the truth. It's a business, Cotton. That's all it is. I'd kill Pa if he was around and got in my way.
Jack, don't draw on me. I'm better than you are, Jack.
No way, kid. See you in hell.
Cotton Pickens, Graphic Audio's newest Western hero, takes to the saddle in Cotton Pickens 1, Blood Valley.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.